Doctors Shani Dahan and Yehuda Schoenfeld believe that medical practice is a form of art, with each complex detail essential to the welfare of the individuals in the care of the physician. They remind us that art and medicine have shared a close relationship in a variety of ways for centuries, as demonstrated by anatomical drawings and textbooks from the 16th century. Leonardo da Vinci, driven by his fascination with the details of the human body and how it functioned, succeeded in creating an anatomical model of the cerebral ventricles and the aorta by using molten wax and a glass structure, respectively, heart and its blood vessels. By using water that contained grass seeds, this experiment enabled him to study blood flow. The doctors look at Van Gogh and Michelangelo, and they've observed closely a work by the 15th century painter Jan van Eyck, known for his realistic style. The painting that they examined is the work titled The Holy Virgin with Canon from 1436, with the cleric providing the medical interest. This painting is housed in the Municipal Museum of Bruges, Belgium. In 1981, Dr. Jan Dekker described the appearance of the cleric's prominent left temporal arteries, along with scar formation and hair loss in this area, a characteristic picture of temporal arteritis. The cleric's left arm, diffusely swollen, may indicate long-standing shoulder pain and stiffness, a feature of polymyalgia rheumatica. Historical documents further confirmed this presumed diagnosis, indicating that around the age of 50, the cleric first began to experience difficulty attending the morning service. He died 12 years later, a history compatible with the natural course of polymyalgia rheumatica. Although temporal arteritis was first described in 1932 and its association with polymyalgia rheumatica not until 1964, it seems that these diseases are not limited to modern times and have existed for many years. The authors suggest that the observation of artwork, studying each line, color, and particular details that make the work intricate in itself, not only gives us a firmer grasp and greater appreciation of the art, but can also enhance examination skills. Art, Dr. M. Therese Southgate wrote in 2011, whether it manifests as paintings, sculptures, poems, symphonies, or the care of patients, is a uniquely human quality. It signifies the unquenchable human quality of hope. It acknowledges the human need to communicate, to share both the knowledge and the art of living well, to confront together the uniquely human enigma of pain, suffering, and death. Painters and physicians know this well. Observation is not merely data collection such as any computer can record. It is not merely looking. It is seeing. It is not only listening. It is hearing. The doctors say, in conclusion, understanding a complex medical problem requires the physician to search for clues beyond science, which may shed light on the correct diagnosis, demonstrating the integration of medical science with art and the humanities. That from the article, A Picture is Worth a Thousand Words, Art and Medicine, by Drs. Shani Dahan and Yehuda Schoenfeld. By the most amazing chance, we are about to hear about art and temporal arteritis in our time and place. We've been following Liana Pandey as she moved from pre-med student to full-time medical student and now to a critical juncture. March is traditionally the month when med school graduates are matched with the institutions where they will spend their residency time. All along, we've been discovering more about Liana and her distinctive artwork. She's always enjoyed painting landscapes, but her passion is creating anatomical images in great detail. Not though for textbooks, but because she's fascinated by them and finds them, in many cases, beautiful. As she awaited match day, Leona Pandey stopped in at the WVIA Benko studio to talk with us about the recent directions her work has been taking and her early interests.
I think I've always been interested in art growing up. Like, we were a family that would go to museums and talk about painting together, and it was always landscapes and what was around me. And then as I got older, like, I'm always studying science and reading books. So then my art became more of what I love, geared towards science and medicine. But then as I was applying to medical school and in medical school, it became more anatomy. Now, as I've seen patients more like third and fourth year of med school, it's also a little mix of my colleagues, like being my med student friends and the residents around us, and also some patient narratives. Like, there's a couple patients I've spoken to where I'm like, so this has nothing to do with your medical care at all, but it would be really cool if you'd let me draw this thing. And they usually say yes. It's always some kind of, maybe it's a surgery of theirs or a picture from their anatomy in some way. And you'd never be able to tell who it is from that painting. You'd never identify the individual. And they also sort of know this, but it's just interesting to have that spin because sometimes it sits with that patient and also other people who've experienced something similar in a different way.
And how is that different, Leona, from what you might find in a textbook?
I don't think it's ever been a goal to do medical illustration. It sort of looks like that because I'm kind of neurotic in the sense that I want it to look accurate. If I'm going to draw a spine, I want everything to line up exactly perfectly. So I don't like drawing spines for that reason. But in this case, it's like, yes, the anatomy's perfect. Yes, it's exactly what the pathology should. But it's something that I've enjoyed looking at and participating in, and I'm reflecting on that, and also it just makes me happy to be a part of. I think I heard a quote somewhere that your art is a part of your life you wouldn't mind living over again, and I think that's definitely true for all, like, the patient stories I really enjoyed and, like, the anatomy I've learned, or if it's, like, more education-based. So it's just, I guess, moments from my own life that I've enjoyed enough to kind of add my own spin to it and show the beauty of that part of medicine or science to other people.
And you in the past have used the word beauty, that you have been able to show us images of the brain that you have rendered or the heart, and that you find beauty in those organs as they are, right?
Yeah. I mean, the brain stuff is definitely still happening because I'm applying neurology now and waiting to match this month. And as part of sort of my, like, really zany attempt to ward off stress, I, like, taught myself to make my own lamp. But the lamp is, like, it's like I sculpted a brain as the base, and the lampshade has this, like, embroidered neurons on the side of it. And I taught myself to do the electrical work. So I'm standing over these wires and learning how to do it different ways. But yeah, ultimately, it is, like, showing the beauty of what I enjoy in medicine. I don't think if I said brain lamp to most people, they would have enjoyed a brain lamp. But my mom, who's also an artist and does not draw anything medical, looked at it and she's like, this reminds me of those, like, Victorian lampshades, because it's just like gold thread and a black lamp. And I guess if you didn't know there were neurons, it just looks like an interesting kind of contemporary design.
And also, when you first went off to med school, very shortly after that, you were invited to paint murals on the walls, weren't you?
Yeah, my school. So when I got into Toro in Middletown, New York, they, at the admissions individual and the dean of the school, had asked me, could you paint something for us? And then I found time to do that. So it's like an installation that I wanted to keep at the school. And there's a couple other paintings that I've left there too, where I've drawn this, like, really intricate heart. And there's two paintings next to it, one of brain, one of lungs, that are, I made sort of paint by number. I drew it all out and with the color scheme. And then I invited everyone who was taking classes at the school, like through the master's and the DO program, to come in and, like, fill in the colors. So now there's, like, a list of all the people who participated, and they really enjoy that kind of art. So after that, I think AMSNI, which is, it's a group of the medical schools in the state of New York, sent that out about how there's this medical student who does, like, very anatomically accurate medical drawings. And then I got along with the like anatomy department at my school while I was there for that reason, because I would just ask, hey, is it cool if I sketch that? Or like, and then I'd come back and ask them, be like, do you notice the mistake in this? And if I was like, if they don't notice the anatomic error, then it's fine. And usually they would sign off and be like, yeah, I think it looks good.
The remarkable thing is that you continued to be noticed. We have been talking with you all along, and at one point you received a fellowship to be partnered with a doctor who was also an artist for a year.
So the American Medical Women's Association has like a yearly artist in residence program where it's the Dr. Catherine Koh, artist in residence. She's a neurosurgeon and artist in New York City. And she sort of takes someone on every year. And the same way, like in an art school, you'd critique your art. Everybody from across the country who's in the group gets on Zoom and sort of critiques each other's work and gives each other pointers and compliments. And so I did that for a year. And then I kind of just joined the committee. So now this year, I'm their co-chair, medical student co-chair of the committee. And they've preemptively, before MASH, made me their resident co-chair of the committee, which is very flattering, but also stressful. I'm sure I'll match.
Will that be helping them to coordinate conferences and that kind of art exchange that you've just described?
Right. So we have like our monthly meetings that we do. We talk about art regularly. And this year is coming up on the 10th anniversary of the Studio Art Committee's existence. So even though now art and medicine is sort of weaving into the curriculum of different schools across the country, but they've started doing this, I think, a little bit before that. So they wanted to celebrate that. And they have their national conference in Boston with the Women in Healthcare Congress. So we're going to all go up there and display some of our art during the conference. And we have a panel where we'll be talking, all of us will be talking about our art and how it relates to the group and how we've started doing things like preserving our artwork in the Drexel Legacy Medical Archives. And I have two paintings there too, but we'll be trying to talk about like how do women in medicine relate to a historic, how do they have a historic implication with our work? Because I think a lot of people like to compare my art to Frank Netter, but I think I had a rotation in Philadelphia this year where I went to the museums. And I think what more closely lines up with some of what I've been doing, even though he's not in medicine himself, is Thomas Aikens and his work with that painting where he was painting a surgery in Jefferson, which I thought was sort of strange that I'm not interested in art history regularly and having time to read it, so I wouldn't have known about it. But I realized it was odd that no one had made that comparison, because he's a realist artist. And although he's not a female in medicine, I think that kind of lines up more with where I'm taking medical inspiration and kind of making it into artwork and putting my lens on it.
You have suggested, as we've communicated, to arrange for mm-hmm. you to come in, that situations now are of interest to you, gatherings around a bedside, perhaps, right? Which would be more Aikens-like in that sense that you have the setting, the scene, right?
Yeah, and I think his painting that is famously there from Jefferson is this graphic kind of surgery where you can see a little bit of blood and you can see everyone up these aisles, you know, writing furiously or watching the surgery. And like the modern day equivalent to that is what I found interesting. It's like residents discussing a case with the attendings. So I have one painting where everybody's kind of sitting along a long conference table and everybody gets there early to the hospital. So the sun is still rising in the background and there's just brains on the big TV projected so that everybody can kind of compare the images together and talk about what that means in medicine. And I think it's interesting because I didn't realize that's something that was being documented previously historically. But I also think we have lost that a little bit with everybody just sort of taking pictures to document medical history and what happens in medicine. We don't have like a very specific lens or personality that talks about what is medicine today. I mean, people take videos and fun TikToks and have their own thoughts, but we don't have a static artistic perspective like we used to for all those things. I mean, those were born out of necessity because you weren't always taking pictures of everything then. But I went to some of the New York Academy of Medicine's like rare book library, and they had to have people sit there and draw stuff and focus on very specific parts of anatomy or medicine to put it into the context of their narratives. But now, like, with a picture that, unless you have a very good photographer, you don't have that narrative as cleverly in front of you. And the people in medicine are not necessarily those skilled photographers who can display that narrative.
And you mentioned that you have two in the Drexel collection. Tell us a little bit more about the archive.
So the Drexel Legacy Medical Archives are basically, they're not intended for art technically. It's a group that they archive conversations and events and groups in medicine and what it is that they've discussed and what they're going to do. And, you know, when I toured the archives, they had all kinds of, like, how did they teach anatomy then? Like, now we have apps where you're flipping through images and slices. And then it was flip books where they have, like, a pop-up book today. They had all kinds of tabs you pull and you see what's behind it, and that's the anatomy. Or they have conference agendas from, like, the 1920s. And, you know, you can see which topics were relevant then that sometimes still make relevance now. So their main goal is to sort of create a reservoir of information that's well preserved, the documents where medicine is gone. And our group, in the sense, in the American Medical Women's Association, our group, we're unique in that all of us are sort of documenting different parts of medicine. Like, I'm documenting sort of my medical education journey without having meant to. And my two paintings, where I have, like, one that's more strictly anatomy there, that's a brain. And I have another that's a little bit more contemporary and women's based, and it's pink. It is gross anatomy of a uterus, like what it would look like out of a person. But it's pink and it's, like, white, and it's got an artsy kind of contemporary look to it because it's more, it's less sterile and what you'd expect from, like, an organ on a table. But it also is, it looks a little bit more pop art and modern.
And you don't get that in a photograph.
No.
No, we get that, of course. Also, then, when you get a chance to go into a residency in neurology, have you been thinking all along about the parts of the brain, left and right, where creativity is and where rational thought might be located?
Neurologists like to do this thing called localization, where you're based on, like, symptoms or, like, you know, just what's happening to the patient. They'll pick out parts of the brain and say, like, oh, that must be happening there, or there must be a problem with something there, like the temporal lobe is hearing and this and that. So it comes up more frequently than you'd assume, or the visual pathway and, like, where that would end up in the brain. So, I mean, that sort of stuff does end up coming up. But I never thought I would keep drawing relative to my medical career so regularly, nor did I expect I was going to start drawing what my patients were doing. I think regularly in interviews this year, people kept asking me, like, oh, well, how do you plan to bring your art into medicine? And I always said, I don't. Like, this is something I do for fun. It's not, like, I don't ever expect to professionally make money off of my love of brain lamps. It's something I enjoy doing. And that makes me really happy. But if other people take interest in it, that's just something that's as a bonus. I was in this one clinic where someone who had Parkinson's was very depressed about their diagnosis, according to the other people I was working with. And I didn't know this, but they just happened to show us a picture of the surgery for their deep brain stimulation implant. And I thought it was really cool. So I read the room for a second. And I was, so this is going to be a little odd. You know, if you say yes or no to this, this has nothing to do with the way anybody's going to treat you. But do you care if I draw this? And I think he just kind of was like, yeah, I guess. If you really want to, I'm not going to stop you. And then I happened to see him, like, a week or a week and a half later, and they really enjoyed the painting. So it was a circular canvas that it looks contemporary enough. You can't tell it's a surgery necessarily. I've been told it almost looks like somebody's putting machinery in water. And on top of it, when someone's draped for surgery, they have all this plastic around that area. So I spent the weekend kind of melting plastic to kind of make the plastic come off the circular canvas. And I don't know what it actually is supposed to be. It's some kind of random plastic that I got a lighter and, like, melted it in different ways to kind of make this plastic layer. But I guess the piece really resonated with the patient, and they seemed really overjoyed by it, and they wanted a photo of it, and they're like, I'm going to show it to my surgeon. They're going to really enjoy it. And, you know, they ended up posting it on their Instagram, and they really enjoyed it. So I think it connected more with them than all the medical jargon did, which is understandable. Not everybody's walking around remembering what they gathered from high school or college science. And it definitely wasn't what I intended or where I thought I would go with that. And it's not something we can do on a mass scale with connecting the humanities to the sciences, but it made me happy and it made the patient happy.
To see somebody who was truly distressed with the diagnosis and depressed, yeah. And then to give that person a fresh way of looking at that surgery, something to help with the shift that clearly occurred, that's a real gift.
Yeah, it's definitely not what I expected either. There was another patient too who had a very large pulmonary embolism, so like just a big clot in their lung. And I didn't meet them personally at first. I just saw the picture of the clot and it was like their entire lung. And I kind of wanted to make a gold clot, but I just went over to their room and I asked them how they were feeling and how they were doing. And they said, oh, they didn't even notice this was going on. They're very active. And I was just talking to them. And then I said, this is also going to sound kind of strange, but do you mind if I draw your clot? And they were like, yeah, sure. Just and I showed it to them again before they left. And they were like, this is so interesting. And they were asking me all kinds of medical questions that I'm sure countless people provided them the answers to about how their care went. But I'm not sure that it quite clicked for them until they saw that painting. They're like, really? It was that big? And I was like, this is technically almost a reproduction of your surgical image. It's just I've made it gold. It's like the glammed up version of the medical clot. And somebody definitely told them the answer to all these things, but it just didn't quite connect until they saw the painting. So I thought that's really interesting. And so far, that's where I'm going with it, just based on where things are.
If you're just doing it by rote, that's no good. But if there's something that you're curious about, that certainly would make a difference, I would think, for you and for them.
Right. I think sometimes it's like, is this unique enough that I haven't seen it before, at least, or that I don't believe most people have? Or was there something in the patient's story that I thought was particularly interesting? One MRI I regret not getting was that of this patient who had a large cerebellar lesion. So they have a big brain tumor in the back of their brain. And they are a terminal diagnosis. And the entire time I was there, they were dealing with a lot of pain. So like it never crossed my mind while I was there to get that image for that reason. But I think about this patient so regularly that I'm like, I wish I had a way to commemorate it. So sometimes it is a little bit of a judgment call. Like I'm not going to bring that up, even though we did get along and I saw this person several times a day. But it's also, oh, that was a missed opportunity, but I also would want to paint it. So there's a lot of factors at play. I would want to be able to kind of illustrate many things, but also I'm a human being, so these things don't always, like, I don't think of them in the time that they are happening.
And I think the times we've met you before, Liana, it always comes out that you aren't squeamish. You would be someone who had no problem going into the morgue and hanging out with the cadavers and so forth, right? Is that?
That's probably accurate, yeah.
That's a good sign that you're in the right field, because rather than making you back off, you just want to know more about it and learn more.
I think it's been particularly useful with patients like the one who was a hospice candidate, because I'm not going to have a particularly negative reaction to the way someone else's life circumstances are, which I think is useful because, I mean, they're already going through so much. They don't need someone who's having heavy emotional reactions to their life situation. I think it's because I've just, like, loved and been involved in medicine for so long. Like, I volunteered at a hospice when I was in middle school locally. So I was just sketching. Technically, I was sketching patients then, too, because, I mean, in middle school, you're not doing patient care. But there were people who were on their own who didn't necessarily have family in the area to be with them. So I would sit with them and talk to them if they could speak and draw things that they enjoyed. And it made me happy. So even though that's not how the typical middle schooler spends their day.
And your dad is a doctor, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He does physical medicine and rehabilitation, so PM&R.
And how much did you absorb growing up in a household with an MD?
I think it's kind of interesting because PM&R is sort of like the adjacent field to neurology. Neurology is a little bit dorkier and specific. But I did one rotation at his practice with some of his colleagues because I thought it'd be kind of fun. And one of the fellowships I was considering was like doing something with pain. So I thought it was interesting because like that's how I've grown up seeing his pain patients and having them call to him for advice. And now I got to see some of them. I also did another rotation at Geisinger this year. And while I was at Geisinger, when you go through the med student has boundless time for chart review and where these patients have been. And then I saw some of the patients were my dad's patients that I was assigned by pure chance. So I went to their room and I was like, do you go see Dr. Pandey? And they were like, oh yeah, he's great. I was like, oh, I'm his daughter. And they were so excited. Oh my God, you know, you got to look through my chart. I saw your dad this morning because my dad also goes to Geisinger. So we wave at each other in the hall and his patients would see me and him at the same time. So that was kind of cool. Obviously growing up in medicine, like that meant that whatever side of me that was interested in science saw medicine and, you know, patients with chronic problems that I don't mind seeing in neurology as well, and probably definitely biased the kind of science I was interested in.
And we've met your mom and interviewed her separately, and one time when you were both together, I think we were talking about how what you do is not the same, but she was volunteering that there is something about a sense of color that you might share. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we're both really into color. She does very traditional Indian folk art that's very detailed, and she also does some religious art and just art that's unique to India and preserving those traditions. And mine, I don't think really fits a category, but both of us are always talking about color. And like, I have very specific colors I like yellow ochre, and she is always interested in very bright colors. And what we've noticed is everything is, like, home decor lately is like white and beige, and everything I'm buying and that she's buying and the clothes that we wear are always bright colors, and I buy bright shades of lipstick, and it's never this subdued, I don't know, I guess it's trendy to have subdued pastel colors, but I have too many colors and so does she, and that's our like commonality.
We're talking to you before you've been placed when it comes to your residency. And when we share this conversation with our listeners, you no doubt will have met your match, and we hope it's the one that you want. But how will your experience in med school differ from the experience of being a resident?
It's a different kind of stress. Med school was a lot of hours with the books, and then now it's lots of just long hours in the hospital. And it'll be an adjustment for sure, but I imagine I'll find time to paint. Because I'm still, I get a lot out of art. Like, I think some people pick a hobby simply because they think they need a hobby in life, so they do this thing kind of formulaically. But I really enjoy art, and I feel like it really does something for me, so I'll make time to do it. I'll wake up at 4 a.m. before I go to the hospital for rotations, if it means I get to work an hour on one of my paintings, because it makes me at least happier for that day. Anybody who knows me knows I have a stupid amount of pens with me at all times that have nothing to do with it. They're like artist pens, and there's a sketchbook if there's downtime. And it's not always the fun art, like that elaborate pieces that I'd want to do, but it makes me really happy to get to do those kinds of pieces.
You mentioned in terms of the Drexel archives and how there would be flips and tabs and you'd pull things. You have an image, don't you, of an eye? Tell us about that.
I started 2 or 3 paintings where I should do more, but those two I got really nailed down on, where you pull a tab and you watch the eye move. It's like, honestly, when I discovered it, I said it like 100 times in a row. It's called an optokinetic nystagmus strip. And it sounds super fancy, but it's really just this candy cane colored striped ribbon that neurologists carry in their pocket in movement disorder neurology. And it's so elaborate. It's just to watch eyes move, and it has this ridiculous name. So I was like, there absolutely needs to be a painting. But like visually on its own, this optokinetic nystagmus strip is just, it's just a ribbon. It just looks like a candy cane colored ribbon. So I wanted to figure out a way to make movement without it being just like a video or something, because that's not as interesting. And I saw in the Drexel archives this pulling tabs. So I was like, maybe I can just figure out how to make. So I called one of my friends because I'd seen them use this. So they watch the eye move back and forth. The same way when your eye watches a train move, your eye kind of jerks back and forth. So that's what they're watching with the strip. They ask you to focus on the red bars and they drag it past you like a magician. And I called a friend and I was like, okay, I need you to stare at a ribbon for me and send me a video. And I gave her very specific instructions. And she just said, yeah, okay. And so she sent me a video of this and I drew her eye. So you'd pull the tab, and as you pull the tab, you can see her eye move back and forth the way it would go there. And I had another elaborate one. This one, I guess, is more autobiographical. So if you scratch your cornea, you get like this dye put in your eye that tells you if that part of your eye has a scratch. It's like a fluorescein dye, and it looks like kind of glow in the dark. So I was like, okay, I need it to glow in the dark. So I have a friend who works at MIT, and I called him. I was like, how could I make like a pulling tab where it just lights up so that it glows in the dark? And he was like, okay, so this is not that hard. And I was like, you're sure it won't take up too much time out of your day for you to help me with this? And he goes, this would be like if I called you about Band-Aids. This is not that hard. So he taught me how to use like a breadboard and how to buy these UV lights. And then it's on like a wheel. So then when you pull the tab, the wheel spins and there's a second eye that'll like do the glow in the dark version. So you put the dye on this little like paper strip and it's like on the edge of your cornea and you spread it around. And then once you look at it under the special light, you see this kind of glow in the dark version if you have a scratch. And I didn't feel like drawing my own eye again because I have 8 paintings of my own eye. So I called another friend and I was like, I have 2 specific poses I need you to show me. And he just posed for the painting. So I have some interesting art going.
And they all know you, so yeah. They agree.
No, I mean, I have another friend who agreed in the same vein. On a rotation, I saw a patient who had, it's called giant cell arteritis. So there's a big artery that's sort of inflamed, and it's very rare to see the actual artery. Usually it's just tender. You don't see the actual like artery bulge out of the side. And I asked the attending in charge, was like, could I paint this? And he goes, yes, but you can't use the patient's face. So I was like, okay, I need to find a way to just real life Photoshop just the side of her forehead above her eye and get a different face. So I called a different friend. I was like, okay, so I'm going to FaceTime with you and I'm going to tell you how to tilt your head in different angles. And then I'm going to take a screenshot because I can't show you this patient's face, but you need to know how to stand so that it lines up appropriately with her thing. And she kind of went with it. I have friends with very unique interests, so I listen to their unique interests and they go along with mine, and it's made for some interesting art this year.
Liana Pandey, artist and medical student awaiting her residency placement, speaking about her artwork and its relationship to her medical studies. To see her work, you can visit her website, and that I'll spell it out, LeanaPande.com, Liana Pandey, LeanaPande.com, and we'll certainly be following her when she enters her residency, through her residency, and then becomes a certified MD.